Hi everyone, we have a special announcement before we begin this week's episode. Have you ever wished that you could walk around a city and be given a private, intimate tour whispered into your ears in a sultry tone by a celebrity expert guide?
All the time. Yeah.
Well, that dream is now a reality if you're visiting London. Ooh. Because QI has teamed up with VoiceMap, a brilliant self-guided tour app to bring you the first quite interesting tours, packed full of our trademark unusual facts.
And narrated by none other than Mr. QI himself, Sir Stephen Fry.
Whoa. Yeah. You simply download the app from the Apple Store or Google Play, select your tour, stick your headphones in, and get walking.
It's really easy to use. You can put your phone away because VoiceMap monitors your location as you're on the move, and it plays audio to you automatically as you arrive at each location. So it's great. You don't need to check your phone the whole time.
You can do it whenever you like, and like start whenever, stop, have a drink, halfway through.
Do it at 3 a.m. if you're interested.
Creepy.
We've got good street lights here in London, so you know, you'll be able to see everything. We've put two London tours together so far, one of Westminster and one of the City and Bankside.
That's right. So whether you're a first-time visitor to London or a lifetime local, you can take directions from Stephen and see the city from a whole new perspective. For example, did you know that
London is home to over 8.4 million trees, covering 21% of the city? This means that by the UN's standards, it can officially be classified as a forest.
That's so cool. I didn't know that.
I feel so healthy now.
Yeah. Or did you know that our most famous landmark, Big Ben,
keeps accurate time with the help of a handful of pre-decimal coins? A single penny balanced on the pendulum can speed the clock up by 2/5 of a second.
Who uses cash these days?
Yeah, only our clocks.
Well, yeah, only our clocks. That's where it all is.
You might discover how
London's classic red phone boxes were actually based on a tomb.
Oh, they do look quite like a tomb, actually.
So, what's not to love? To get started, just visit qi.com/voicemap.
If you're not going to be in London anytime soon, you can still get involved. You can listen to the tours virtually, just like a podcast or audiobook.
But before you crack into that, make sure you enjoy this week's episode of Lunchbox Envy.
Hey. This week on Lunchbox Envy, Alfred Hitchcock was bizarrely more scared of them than he was of blood.
We eat 1.4 trillion of them every year, which is enough to make an omelette bigger than England.
This week, we're cracking into eggs. Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Jack and I'm here with my fellow QI elf Manu. Hey Manu.
Hey Jack. We are also here with chef and food writer Rosie McKean.
Hello.
How are you doing this morning?
Super. How are you guys?
Great, thanks.
Good. No one's going to say it then.
What? No, we can't.
Excellent.
Get that out of the way. So on the menu this week is eggs. Obviously, there are many different types. I think we'll focus on chicken eggs mostly today. But there's quite a selection of alternatives. People eat duck eggs, don't they? They have a higher fat content than chicken eggs, don't they?
Much richer.
Yeah, interesting. And much more expensive.
Yeah.
So therefore, for richer people. any other eggs that we eat?
Well, I wanted to share with you that on the way here, I realized something that once, as a home economist for a different show, a well-known reality TV show on ITV, sometimes it happens in Australia, but in my case, I was filming in Wales.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I had to buy and use emu eggs.
No way.
And I found the pictures of them on my phone. And they are literally the most beautiful things you've ever seen. Like, I actually couldn't believe how gorgeous they are.
Because emus are classically not the sexiest looking bird.
Oh,
they're
bright
teal. They're literally the most beautiful colour.
And they're enormous.
Is that
they're
like a so small big rugby ball, I'd say?
Yeah. So I cracked the one of them into a Tupperware.
Wow. Oh my God.
You can see that the yolk is basically the size of my hand.
It's so freaky. That is, I don't know why, it's too big to be appetizing.
No.
I wouldn't want to eat that.
It also looks disproportionately big, the yolk. Like, as opposed to a chicken egg.
It's like 50%, more than 50% yolk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the celebs loved it. That's what I'll say. They loved it.
And it's not the biggest egg in the world, is it? Because that belongs to the ostrich, mm-hmm. which I think is almost twice as big.
Really?
And it's about as big as 24 hen's eggs, I think.
Whoa.
I remember Waitrose once sold ostrich eggs for like £10.
Did you buy one?
No, I couldn't. They were sold out.
£10 seems pretty cheap to me.
Well, it was back in the day before inflation happened.
Right, okay.
How old are you, Jack?
I'm ancient. This is back in the 1400s.
I love it.
But yeah, they take an hour or more to boil. Did you scramble this emu egg or boil it?
So I'll just say, I don't think it's actually a problem. It was for ITV's I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. My job was to provide the celebrities with their daily food in camp.
Oh, wow.
Which meant sourcing loads of different ingredients for them.
Yeah.
Because they had to be a little bit more challenging. I couldn't just give them like some beef mince that was, you know, not really in keeping with the theme.
Oh, so off camera they're eating food, but you need to keep it
so
like
every
survival food, basically.
Yeah. Well, every episode they win a certain amount of food through competing in a trial. And that food was from me.
Oh, cool.
And I had to find just like cool and interesting proteins mainly. And emu eggs were one of the proteins that I gave them.
Okay.
And yeah, they loved them. They said they were really delicious. Mm. That's what I remember happening anyway.
Did you try the emu eggs yourself?
I didn't because I just like if they won all of their stars in the trial,
I
had to give them all. So I couldn't try any of them. But also it was a bit grossed out. Like I once I'd cracked it, I was like, yeah, I think eggs, I love eggs, but sometimes like the smallest, tiniest thing can really gross you out, right? Like if there's a bit of bogey white, you know?
Oh, the chalaza.
The chalaza?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Tell
what
us about
that?
The chalaza.
So, I actually love. So I am, when I was working kitchens, I had to do, whenever you're prepping an egg yolk, you know, you pinch the chalaza off because it looks messy. Say if you're curing them.
Yeah.
And I didn't think about what they were at all, but it's a part of the white or the membrane that holds the yolk in place inside the egg and stops it from smacking around.
Oh, wow.
And sticking
so clever.
To the it's super clever. Yeah, so it keeps the yolk nice and insulated. So when, say, mum's constantly turning the egg around in the nest to make sure it doesn't get stuck to the inside of the shell, that will also do that same job. It's like, you know, when you're a kid and you go on the like bungee things with the trampoline.
Yeah.
It's like that, but for the yolk.
That's what all I think about now.
Yeah.
This tiny little wee babe suspended in midair in an egg.
It's like an anti-scramble device.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
Have you ever tried to scramble an egg inside the shell? Like, have you ever done that thing?
Oh, I've seen that experiment.
Or you, like, stick a pin in it and you... You know, yeah. Sorry.
You do what?
For reference, I did a sort of jabbing motion.
No, I've never done that. I've seen the one where you put it in a pair of tights and then you twist the tights up and then you sort of untwist them so that it spins around really fast and it's like a centrifugal way to pre-scramble your egg.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah.
Sorry, but
finally a good use for tights.
That's all I use them for. Fishnet specifically.
Perfect.
Perhaps a good place to start is the age-old question, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Do we have an answer? So I think it's the egg, given that evolutionarily, chickens evolved from reptiles. So at some point in history, a reptile laid an egg, which was a chicken when it hatched.
Yeah.
So the egg came first. Evolutionarily, reptiles have been making eggs long since chickens. But I think the specific question is which came first, the chicken's egg or the chicken? Do you know what I mean?
I see what you mean, yeah.
It's a bit
you're
of a
saying
cheat
it's not
eggs.
The chicken's egg. It was a reptile's egg, just so happened to be a chicken.
But Manny, you've got a different theory, have you?
Yes. So jungle fowl, they are the predecessors of the chicken, which we actually mentioned in the chicken episode.
Oh, yes.
I think what's happened is that you have jungle fowl that evolve and evolve and evolve to a certain point, and then you have like the mummy and daddy jungle fowl who
love each other very much.
They do love each other very much. They lay a jungle fowl egg Okay. But the change has happened in that egg. So technically, the egg is a jungle fowl egg.
Because it came out of a mum jungle fowl.
But the chicken is inside that jungle fowl egg. So technically.
So you think the chicken came first?
That's what I'm saying.
Wow. And then that chicken would have laid an egg.
That was a chicken egg.
Which was a chicken egg.
Yes.
So just to say, at the top of the episode, I said, are we going to have an answer to that? And Jack and Manu both looked at me and said, yes, yes, we will have an answer. But you both disagree with each other.
We gave you two answers. That's more than you wanted.
But both are also possibly correct. Is that helpful?
Well, yes and no, because yes, they're great theories. No, we don't know with our bloody answer still.
Okay, fine. I think I'm right, but that's fine.
So, should we open our first lunchbox?
Let's do it.
Right, it's time for our first lunchbox, and that's you, Manny. What have you brought?
Okay, I apologise. I have bought the century egg.
I've always wanted to try one of these, but I've been too scared.
Well, there's a good reason for that.
Oh, no.
So this is a preserved duck egg. It's not been preserved for a century, as the name would suggest.
Oh, that's a shame.
Commonly eaten in Southeast Asian countries. So the first time I had one was when I was working at a Taiwanese restaurant.
Oh.
People used to have it on congee, which is like a rice porridge for breakfast.
Delish.
It's used in quite a few different meals. Sometimes it's eaten on its own. Usually it's eaten with something else because it is a very strong flavor. Do you want to try it? And then we can talk a little bit about how it's preserved. And Okay.
Let's do it. I'm just a bit scared that I might not like it, but I'm going to give it a good go.
Okay.
Because I don't want to be a wuss, because I have lots of friends who love century eggs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just know my taste and I have a feeling it's not going to be for me.
It's definitely an acquired taste.
Yeah.
I think maybe an equivalent in my head is blue cheese. That kind of funk.
Very funky.
That funk.
Okay.
Gonna crack the egg.
Oh, wow.
Oh, it's speckledy on the inside.
Oh, beautiful.
It's so beautiful. It is really beautiful.
We'll take some photos for social media, shall we?
Does actually look a lot like a dinosaur egg.
It does.
It's like a precious mineral.
Where did you get it, Manu?
I got it from an Asian supermarket very close to our office in Hoban.
Amazing. Great. Some great Asian restaurants and supermarkets in that area.
Yeah.
The thing is, right, it's difficult because this is something that is beloved.
That's in many
food cultures. And I feel like often with those things, when you've grown up with a white palate, like we've eaten a certain spectrum of foods in our lives, it doesn't matter. You are often just not able to enjoy them. But I want to enjoy it. I really want to. And I know that so many people that I love and trust love these. But I'm just like so steeply skeptical.
That is fair. And I will say it's rare that people eat them on their own.
Yes.
Which is a big thing.
Like, well, why have you given it to us on your own?
I wanted us to try it and appreciate it.
Okay.
No, she's right.
Just the pure century egg flavor. So we think, obviously, with the history of food and recipes, it's really hard to pin down exactly when and where certain foods are from. Historians' best guess is this originated about 500 years ago in rural China. And the story is that a farmer lost some duck eggs in like a kind of swampy area and then found them again, tried them and was like, oh my God, guys, this is amazing.
Trust me on this one. Yeah.
Traditionally how it's made is you take strong black tea, lime, salt, fresh wood ash, and you let that mix all together and then cool overnight. And then you dump in your eggs.
Raw?
Yes, in raw with the shells on. You soak them for between 7 weeks and 5 months.
So not 100 years.
Not 100 years. They also have a few different names. So some people call them the 1,000-year egg, the millennium egg. In Thailand and Laos, they're called horse urine eggs.
Oh, no.
Because of
their
smell. And it is quite ammonia-y. It's got a serious funk. So, let's give it a little.
Let's give it a whirl.
Woo.
the white has gone brown and the yolk has gone kind of dark green, I'd say.
I like the white particularly. It looks like amber.
Mmm.
Cheers. Chin chin. Enjoy.
I think.
Rosie's gagging.
I'm not. Listen, I don't want to be like this wuss who doesn't like it because, you know, in chef circles, that's not very cool, guys. However, I do not like it. It's quite fishy, which I didn't expect.
Yeah,
and
you're
is
right.
Not really quite the flavor profile I would hope for when I eat a sort of quite soft egg.
I thought it was quite nice, actually. I was expecting it to be worse. Or I more think pungent, actually. It's a bit like, it's much more like an egg than you'd expect.
Mm. Yeah.
There's just a little hint of something else.
I think, truthfully, unfortunately, this isn't the right way to try it. We should be trying it like on top of congee or like on top of something else as a sort of more of a seasoning, like a finishing than a picnic.
Straight
egg.
Up. I think I like the straight up. Like go in, go hard. It's such an unusual flavor, but I agree. Like this is not representative of how this would be.
No.
And you're right. Like there's a philosophical argument to say that if you haven't tried it by itself, do you even know if you like it? Right. So technically, at this point, I do not, but I might on top of congee. Something amazing I discovered whilst researching this carefully and diligently is that a yolk is actually a single cell. It is the largest single cell in the animal kingdom.
No way.
Damn.
Yeah.
Actually, I did know that about humans. Like a human egg, despite being as big as a full stop in size 14 font, is the biggest cell in the human body. But yeah, I guess you're right. If that extends to chickens, who actually generally have much smaller cells than us, isn't that interesting that their eggs are so much bigger than our eggs?
Mm, yeah, crazy.
That is mad. But also the yolk is the egg, right? And then the white and the shell around it is protecting. So if you think about how chickens in the reproductive system, the yolk that comes from the ovaries down.
Yeah. If this hasn't put you off eggs for life.
I was going to say.
Wait till you hear the rest of the episode.
Well, that leads me on to my next question. Can you eat a fertilized chicken egg?
That is a really common question. You'd be surprised. And the answer is yes, you can eat a fertilized egg.
Wow.
Would you want to is another question. Mm.
Well, it depends, I think, on the level of gestation, like right at the end of the process when it's practically a chick going to have bones and stuff, right?
Exactly. But there is a dish in the Philippines called the balut, which is exactly that. It is a duck fetus in the egg, which you eat straight up.
That's a tough one. I'm really glad you didn't bring that today.
Yeah.
I thought about it. No, I couldn't source any, but I would be so interested to try that.
Have you guys ever had a double yolker?
I don't think so, no.
What, never what? In your
no,
life?
Never. I'm not sure I eat enough eggs.
I once had a whole pack.
What?
And I just kept going because I was like, not another one.
No
not
way. Another one.
And then I was like, what am I going to do with all of these eggs that I've cracked? I had to make an omelette for like 10 people.
Did you buy a lottery ticket that week?
I didn't. I should have done. Yeah. Damn it. Apparently the greatest number of yolks found in a single chicken egg.
Oh, yes. Can we guess?
Go on then.
Oh,
five.
No, seven. Wait. I was going to go seven.
No, but surely it's a multiple of two. Go on, Rosie. Put us out of our misery.
I can tell you it's actually my lucky number. Nine.
Oh, that's an odd number.
I don't understand how they got nine in there.
That's amazing. So is there a difference between brown eggs and white eggs? Is one of them healthier than the other?
Normally it's to do with the color of the chicken, which makes sense. So white hens tend to lay white eggs. Brown hens tend to lay brown eggs.
Wow.
But then it gets a bit confusing when you have blue eggs because obviously we don't have blue chickens. It's there's a pigment in the shell, which is actually the same thing that turns bruises blue. They're not entirely sure why, because this is a big question, like why eggs are different colors. There was a recent study that found that darker eggs tend to be laying in colder climates. So they think it might have something to do with conserving heat and attracting heat. So to help with incubation. What I absolutely love is, you know how there's a mad variety of eggshell colors and patterns and speckles and stuff. Yolks, famously, come in different colors as well. Some are quite pale, some are really dark. You can change the color of the yolk with what you feed a chicken.
Oh.
So there are farms where, I mean, I think pretty friendly farms, well, they'll have free-range chickens and they'll plant chili peppers around the farm.
That seems quite cruel.
No, but chickens can't, they don't have the receptors for capsaicin, wow. So they don't mind eating chili at all. Anyway, but the pigment from that chili goes into the yolks and they produce crazy, crazy red yolks.
So that's yeah. amazing.
I have a question for you guys, which I know you know the answer to because you are not dumbasses. Are eggs dairy?
No. This, they're not.
Obviously not, guys. Obviously not. Do they come from a cow? No.
No, but wait.
Yeah, wait. Manchego
comes from a sheep and that's dairy.
Okay, yeah. Fine. Sorry.
Yeah.
Is it lactated? No.
Yeah, good point.
I just never, like, sometimes... In my career, I've had some real clangers where people have been like, oh, I can't eat that. It's got eggs in it. It's got dairy in it. I'm like, babe, no, it doesn't.
Wow. Like,
in their defense, I'm not saying they're right, but for some reason, eggs have historically been put in the dairy section of the supermarket.
Oh, that's a good
totally.
Point.
Totally. Mm-hmm. It's 100% true. Although now it seems to be they're really in the pastries and breads and
it's the baking section.
Baking
yeah.
section, that is what I mean. But yeah. they used to be, you're right. Yeah, yeah, so if you were ever wondering, so this is a definitive answer, no.
Do people
they are
ask
not.
You that then?
They yeah. have done, yeah. I've had to correct various people over the years. And I promise you I did it with a lot more grace than I've just
no,
done.
In my head, you like gave them a little smack.
I cracked an egg on
like,
their head.
Get out of my sight.
Okay, time for our second lunchbox. That's Rosie's.
I have done something quite out of character today, I would say.
Okay.
I have made some brownies. That's not necessarily out of character. Here they are, looking good. Mm-hmm. But I have made them using...
Oh.
Betty Ooh. Crocker.
Oh.
Very nice.
A very
nice.
Famous name.
A very famous woman. Actually, not a real woman, a fictional woman.
No way.
Yeah. Did you know that Betty Crocker never existed?
Damn.
She was made up by the Washburn Crosby Company mm-hmm. to sell, obviously, cake mixes.
Interesting.
But, interestingly, why have I made this bloody, like, ready-to-eat shit like I never, ever do? But to be no shade on it, like, it's useful.
Oh, it's some shade.
The pancake, the
yeah,
pancake
there's
mix.
Some shade in there.
The pancake mix is particularly good. Anyway, it's really interesting because basically when this was first invented... So it contained the flour, the milk, the butter, whatever, all the other ingredients, including dehydrated egg.
Oh.
But it wasn't selling. It didn't sell as well as when they made the mix with no egg in it and you had to buy and mix your own eggs in.
Oh, interesting. Oh. Which you wouldn't expect because it's optimizing for time constantly. Mm.
But I think there's a combination of things of like, you need to do something for it to feel a bit more premium, like a more premium product. You need to have a little bit of ownership over it. And that involves cracking the eggs, doing a bit of whisking, you know, like suddenly you're a chef. Anyway, so essentially the rest of the cake mix is in. And there are literally thousands of variations of Betty Crocker products, like so many different cakes. This is called the Betty Crocker effect. Oh. And then in turn has become known as the IKEA effect. Because of the same reason that people place a higher value on something if they feel like they've had some onus into it.
I've heard of this.
People like
to be involved, don't they?
Yeah. Yep. You need to have a little bit of ownership over it.
Let's try them.
Should we try them?
Yes, please.
They're not like my normal brownies, I will say.
They're beautiful. They're
not bad. It definitely has quite a processed flavor. Like, you can tell that this was more on a supermarket level than a, you know, quaint little bakery on the corner. That's everything's made in the morning, you know. Brownies are actually an interesting one as well because in theory, the perfect brownie is very fudgy, right?
Mm.
And the way you achieve that is by basically undercooking the cake mix. It's essentially a cake mix with dark chocolate in.
Wow, so lazy.
I've actually worried about it in the past with my food hygiene certificates in my mind. Is this okay? Like, is it okay to give someone a medium brownie?
Yeah.
It must be. I think there's just loads of sugar and other things that make it completely fine and preserve it. So, yeah.
Speaking of cooking, I've always wondered. So I've never ordered them. I've never been brave enough. I don't think they're often on menus much. But you see them in old novels like P.G. Wodehouse and, you know, these sort of early 1920s, they're always eating deviled eggs. Mm. How do you devil an egg?
They're so good, man.
They're really good.
The thing is, though, is I'm not really sure if what we now call a deviled egg is the same as an old deviled egg. So the deviled eggs, I know them, and they are in my cookbook, Good Time Cooking, is...
available in all good bookstores.
Yeah. Is a hard-boiled egg, halved. You take the yolk out,
okay,
and you mix the yolk with some other condiments, typically mayonnaise is one of them, famously made with eggs, to create a sort of creamy filling, which you also spice heavily, which is the deviling part.
Okay.
So you pipe that mix back into that cavity that where the yolk was in the hard-boiled mm-hmm. half of an egg. Put some cress on it. Bob's your mother's brother. Delicious.
Yum, that sounds great.
One of my favorite things. But I have to wonder, because... you know, there's lots of other things in British cooking where deviling means kind of like cooking in a buttery, spicy sauce, ooh, like deviled kidneys, deviled chicken. And that's not quite what we just described. So I wonder if there were different versions way back when. But yeah, today, certainly in the south of the States, deviled eggs are a big thing. You would bring them everywhere. And they are great. I love eggs and mayonnaise. It's basically one of my fetishes. Yeah. Mayonnaise is my favorite thing. But I have to ask, what is your favorite way to eat an egg?
With my mouth.
Thank you.
No, that's a good. Maybe a buttery omelette.
A buttery omelette. Interesting.
Very nice.
What about you, Manu?
Every day, boiled, straight up. Can't beat it. But I was thinking about the deviling thing you just said.
Yeah.
Fried boiled egg in curry. So good.
Oh my
so
God. Good. So you boil it first and then you fry.
Yeah, and somehow, I don't know how it works, it's still fudgy and like gooey on the inside and crispy on the outside.
Yeah. I think I agree with you that boiling is my favorite everyday method. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, my brain gets like really stuck on is like, why are two boiled eggs the perfect amount of egg?
Oh, yeah.
But for an omelette, you need three. But that's also quite filling.
Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm.
For scrambling eggs, you also need three. But for fried eggs, you're back down to two per person.
It's egg math.
Egg math is crazy.
No.
It's very arbitrary.
Oh, and then poached.
Poached.
Like 10 poached eggs. Yeah.
Why are they so small?
I don't know what happens to them. Oh, it's also, sorry, that is the worst way to cook an egg, I think.
Really?
This is a good question. Do you keep your eggs in or out of the fridge?
Out.
Same.
Okay, cool. You're moving always... on.
Also, because there are some foods, it is like actively bad to keep them in the fridge. Say like tomatoes.
Come on to that.
But with eggs, surely it doesn't damage them to keep them in the fridge.
It doesn't damage them. They will last longer, actually, if they're refrigerated. The cooler they are, obviously, the less moisture escapes because it's thicker and harder to do that. But for me, certainly with cooking, I have a huge bugbear with refrigerated eggs because they should be at room temperature.
Mm.
For most recipes written in the UK, your eggs are at room temperature.
When you start.
Yeah, yeah. So like when you're baking, for example, and having a big temperature change when you're baking is a real problem because it's why your cake mix will split, for example. It's because fat can't emulsify in something that's really, really cold. So if you're refrigerating your eggs and you're having difficulty with your baking or with cooking, it's because your eggs are bloody cold, mate. You just got to let them stay out.
But in America, I think they have to keep them in the fridge because they wash their eggs.
Yes.
And eggs actually come with a natural barrier around them. And that prevents most of the bacteria getting in and out. So it's actually illegal to wash your eggs in the UK.
Is it?
But in America, they wash their eggs and therefore the barrier is open to all sorts of bacteria, which is why you leave them in the fridge.
That is the only weird thing America is doing right now.
otherwise,
I can't think of a
sane.
Single other thing those guys do weirdly. What I will say is you raise an interesting point because I would never, ever, 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 ever cook anything in the water that I boil an egg in for that reason because it has come out of a chicken's bottom.
Yeah.
To be clear,
the
bum, and it hasn't been washed. So yeah, sure, they look relatively clean. A lot of the eggs that we get, you might get the odd feather, you might get the tiny, you know, if you buy very farm fresh eggs, they might look a bit dirtier. But even so, I wouldn't use that water to cook anything else because I'm worried about what is in it.
So two things. Firstly, boiling water
obviously kills loads of bacteria. I'm being histrionic.
I think it's fine. Second thing, I have not got the answer to this question. but core memory. My mum said that they intentionally stick feathers on free-range eggs.
No way.
To trick you into
conspiracy theory.
I have no idea if this is true, but I need to know now because that just popped into
just
my head.
The light dusting.
Because if you think about
the egg industry,
they're completely clean apart from a single feather. What are the odds on that happening? No dirt, but a feather.
That is actually very true. Also, that would be painful, right? If you lost a feather when you excreted an egg. What do they have? What is the action of getting an egg out?
Birth
an egg. It would be like,
Of course,
it is lay. Yeah, that would be like getting a bikini wax at the same time as giving birth. Yeah,
I think there are other, you know what? I don't want to talk about it.
So speaking of boiling eggs, scientists in 2015 managed to unboil an egg.
What?
Yeah.
What?
It's a completely reversible process. As long as you add urea to liquefy the boiled egg whites.
Sorry, we.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, the active or the smelly part of we.
When I get stuck in the wilderness with a boiled egg and I we, will be like, great, now at least I can unboil my egg.
And then you have to put them in a vortex device to sort of pull apart the proteins and return them to their original state. It sounds like poaching, to be honest.
It is cool, but why would you need that?
Well, why would anyone like study maths? Why would anyone do? What's the point of science? You know, there doesn't need to be a practical purpose. As soon as you, you know, explore these boundaries, then someone will find a use for it years down the line. I think in the future we'll discover that Wi-Fi will run on unboiled eggs.
the only time I can think of is if someone that didn't want a boiled egg, or like you boil them too many and they're like, I only wanted one, and you're like, fuck it, fine, I'll put them in the vortex there.
Let me just quickly go to the loo. I'm just gonna do a wee, get my vortex out. And like, this egg will be good as new in 5 minutes.
Put it back in the chicken. Time for our final lunchbox, and that's mine. I've brought something with a twist. It's an egg. I've boiled it. It looks a bit tarnished. That might be a clue.
Ooh, an old egg.
If I tell you the name Gian Battista della Porta, does that mean anything to you?
An Italian egg.
Yeah, Italian man.
He was an academic and polymath and playwright who was around in the 16th century.
Sorry, what's a polymath?
Polymath is someone who is an expert in many, many things. So thanks to the Inquisition, he was in and out of prison quite a lot. And because he was a cryptographer, he managed to develop a method of smuggling messages into prison so that his friends could write messages on the outside of eggs, boil them, the ink would wash off, but it would go through the semi-porous membrane. So he could peel the egg and read the message inside. And that is what I've tried to replicate.
Whoa.
I'm just thinking about all the stuff I would write on eggs. I hate you.
But you love eggs, sir.
No, I love eggs. I just think
just give
for
them
the
to
people.
Your enemies.
Oh, I see.
You know, like you've gone to the trouble of writing a message.
You just unpeel the egg. It says, you up? So I was inspired by this. I bought an egg earlier. I wrote a message on it in ink. I actually used two different pens. I used a Sharpie and some regular ink. And then I boiled it. And I made sure I used a little bit of vinegar in the water, and it's done the job. So the message now disappeared from the outside. So now we're going to open it and see if it's actually made it to the inside. And I'm going to ask you to read what the message is.
Oh, this is so exciting.
ASMR. Did it work?
No. It's a complete flop. There's nothing to be read at all.
I mean, it's not quite perfect white. Like, it has been dyed a tiny bit, I think. Oh, it feels rubbish. Sorry, it feels
like it would bounce.
You know, the fake bouncy eggs.
Oh, we loved those growing up. I'd always be like, Mom, catch. And she'd be like, no.
Nice.
I had a friend who bought 6 eggs and boiled 5 of them. And then, like, showed it to his presumably very small nephews, so about 8 or 9. And then he was like, look. And then he cracked one on his head and it was boiled. And he knew which one, the unboiled one, so he deliberately gave it to one of the kids. And then they were all trying it out and they were smashing these eggs on their stomach. And then he went to his mum and was like, look, mum. And he just smashed an egg on his face. And it was raw.
I had to do that at a netball social at university once.
Really?
I like basically, because I knew that boiled eggs smell properly like eggy, whereas a fresh egg doesn't. So I kept telling all the girls, like, just smell it. If it smells eggy, you're safe. You're fine. We got through it.
Nice.
Made it to the club.
Oh, wow.
No egg in my hair.
The secret intel.
Yeah. Well, that's how, yeah, because boiled eggs have a really strong.
That's
wait,
a good
from
point.
Outside of the shell?
Yeah. Even so, like, even because you surely you've noticed like a little sulfurous smell.
I have noticed.
When you
actually.
Cook them and the shell will smell intensely.
I just never put two and two together in like a spy novel. Like, this is the secret. Sort yeah. of, you know, how to get through the hazing. There are other things you can use eggs for. Ooh. E.g. building the Taj Mahal.
Seriously?
Well,
what?
Yeah. They used a mortar which contained eggshells.
Ooh.
And apparently it gives a strength and also a colour to the mortar, which is, but it's been used in the Philippines, actually, of a lot of churches, because the Spanish brought eggs, which weren't really common to Filipino culture at the time. And then they would use the egg whites in the mortar. And then they'd be throwing all the yolks like into the sea. And all these women were like, hang on a sec, can't we make some food out of this? Because it's all edible protein. And so that's why to this day, the Philippines, their puddings are actually quite egg-based. There's lots of flan and
classic
custard.
Women saving the day.
Yeah.
Nice.
Before we wrap up, did you know that Ian Fleming mentioned scrambled eggs in 87% of the Bond books he wrote?
Like,
really?
Yeah, James Bond was a big fan. Actually, Ian Fleming mentions all sorts of culinary treats. So if you're a food fan, you know, he describes in great detail the breakfasts and lunches that he has.
Eggs. Eggs. Scrambled, not fried.
Oh.
So that's it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy. For foodie facts and podcast updates, you can follow us on X, Facebook, Instagram and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
You can also get in touch and send us your facts, recipes and questions by emailing us lunchbox@qi.com.
Thank you so much if you've already subscribed. And if you have been enjoying Lunchbox Envy so far, you can leave us a review or a star rating on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening from.
So, Rosie, have you got any nice egg recipes in your book, Good Time Cooking?
Do I ever? I love an egg recipe. I've actually got two that come to mind.
Oh, cool.
One is for perhaps one of the easiest canapés of all time. Egg mayo and crisps.
Nice.
Egg mayo is not used enough, I don't think.
Oh, I agree.
Delicious. And the other one is a little snack of ham, egg and romesco sauce on toast. Delish.
That's good. So we'll leave you with a discovery by scientists in 2018. There was spectroscopic analysis done of the seventh planet from the sun, and it concluded that the clouds in the upper atmosphere are largely made of hydrogen sulfide. Which means that, pleasingly, Uranus smells of rotten eggs.
How very dare you.
See you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Manu Henriot, Rosie McKean, and me, Jack Chambers. It was mixed by Liying Lee and produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.